KBOO Community Radio is requesting proposals for a grant writer to provide ongoing grant writing services and application support. This is a one-year contract position for 200 hours, compensated at $25 an hour. Proposals must be submitted electronically to Delphine Crescenzo, station manager at Del, that's D-E-L, at KBOO.FM. Proposals are due Friday, January 4th at 5 p.m. Responsibilities, background information, the scope of work, and proposal requirements can be found at kboo.fm/grantwriter2018.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place in Portland. The film hosts the path of two combat veterans from the Iraq War as they live with post-traumatic stress, the lack of effective treatment, and their search for healing. This is a crowdsourced event, and tickets are currently available for purchase. There will be a brief Q&A following the film. Again, that's a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place, 340 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Then we walked back to the road, unchained.
KBOO Community Radio is the proud co-sponsor of the third annual David Bowie Memorial Bike Ride on his birthday, Tuesday, January 8th. Come ride your bike around Portland with Diablo as we celebrate the life and music of David Bowie with a mobile dance party and sing-along. Again, that's the third annual David Bowie Memorial Bike Ride at 8 p.m. on January 8th at the corner of Southwest Broadway and Main in downtown Portland near the Schnitzer. More information can be found on the KBOO website under Community Events.
Hello, friends. This is Alyssa Pariah, and you are listening to The Struggle on KBOO Community Radio. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. And I am lucky enough to be in the studio with my friend and yours, Umi Vera.
Hey, Boo.
Hi.
How's it going? Good to see you.
Umi is one of the directors at Familia Queer and Trans Liberation Movement. And she is hoping to stir up some righteous anger about some of the horrendous things that ICE is doing, in case we were not all frustrated and infuriated enough. Please tell us a little bit about the Justice for Roxana campaign.
Good evening. Thank you. Thank you for, you know, having us. I really love your introduction, by the way. Your friendly neighborhood agitator. I'm here for it and here for you and everything you do. At Familia, Trans Queer Liberation Movement, I've hopped on board on staff as the campaign director to bring about an awareness to the situations that our community, our trans and queer community, is going through in their migration and their process of seeking asylum, and what situations that have happened inside of ICE, particularly Roxana Hernandez, who we lost at the hands of ICE on May 25th earlier this year. May she rest in peace and power. There's an autopsy that recently revealed that Roxana was abused and beaten, and a lot of community that was actually also in ICE has also attested to the treatment of you know, being in shackles, being chained, and also having been neglected to receive medical attention that she needed. She was HIV positive, and so at the hands of ICE, they just let all of that really affect her, and it ended up in her losing her life at the hands of ICE. And so we there's many things that ICE hasn't been doing that we're calling for attention and justice. And so, you know, Familia Trans Queer Liberation Movement is an organization that's existed for 5 years, and it's been led by our national advocate, Jenisette Gutierrez, and the executive director, Jorge Gutierrez, no Latino, they're just, no relation, they're just Latino. They've been vocalizing what it was beginning the organization 5 years ago, and having no resources as an institution, but they speak about the fact that they had their voices and their bodies. And many a times they've organized many direct actions where they literally put their bodies on the line, mm-hmm. To demand an abolishment of ICE.
So thank you for talking about the direct action orientation that Familia has, and particularly Jenisette Gutierrez, a story that I like to tell over and over again because of its political significance, is that Jenisette is the woman who famously or infamously, depending on your political orientation and how wedded you are mm-hmm. to respectability politics, yeah. but she is the one that famously yelled from across the room to President Obama. Okay,
yes, she did.
She's the one who mm-hmm. at a black tie gala celebrating the hard fought win of marriage equality, and of course we celebrate that and we say job well done, but what Jenisette offered was that the job is not finished.
Yes, absolutely.
And she was booed and asked to leave. Mm-hmm. And the backlash was pretty immediate, mm-hmm. where a lot of people who are in the mainstream LGBT movement felt like it was disrespectful and we should do what we can not to alienate people. But what Jenisette said, and this is the political significance. It's not just that she, you know, shut down a room of liberals patting themselves on the back. But she said, there are trans women being abused in yes. ICE custody right now under yes. your leadership, mm-hmm. Barack Obama. Yeah. How about, rather than patting ourselves on the back as if we're finished, we lift up the fact that mm-hmm. we have so far to go.
That moment was very significant for Familia, for the movement building, because you're right. Like there, it was a room of executives of mainstream LGBT orgs nationally, and they quickly responded, being next to Jenisette, saying, you know, shushing her and saying things like, "This is not for you," and it was very
they
deliberate.
Lying.
Yes, and you know, this was Pride Month. It was the Pride celebration, and the Supreme Court had just ruled in favor of same-sex marriage, and there are still lots of conversations that are needed to be had in a migrant justice movement, and in a LGBT. Political world and stuff, yeah, like that.
About
and
one so, another.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so Jenisette is really, you know, along with our coalition partners, Get Equal.
Love Get Equal. Shout out.
Get Equal, yes. They did a lot of great work. And they also, you know, it was important for them to work with somebody who actually had experienced migration and who was undocumented themselves, a trans individual. And so there was a strong solidarity. And Get Equal and the organizers had an invite to be at the White House. They were like, well, actually, we know that this needs to be brought. We need to bring attention to this.
Yes.
Jenisette, join us. And so it was a deliberate. This was during the campaign, the Not One More campaign, and the and trans detention. And so what had happened was that.
Can you talk about Not One More?
Yes. Not One More was a campaign very led, very grassroots led by women, labor movement, lots of queer and trans individuals at the forefront. A lot of folks that had come out of dream work dream activism, mm-hmm. Since the early 2000s. And a lot of queer folks. And
now you got to talk about dream.
Let's do it. Yeah. 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 The Dream Act.
You know, it's a point that I always want to bring. You know this.
Yes.
You've heard my show.
Yes.
And all of my listeners know it's very important that when we bring up topics, organizations, acronyms, ideas, mm-hmm. terms that are not widely known, we got to pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And give it to the people.
Yes.
So please talk about the Dreamers and what the Dream Act
absolutely.
And all that.
So the Dream Act was a federal legislation that saw efforts to give access to individuals that arrived to the country early on, came with their parents, child of immigrant parents, mm-hmm. Even if they're regardless of their parents being undocumented or mm-hmm. not, to be able to have access to higher education by paying in-state tuition, because students, individuals that have parents who are undocumented or not from this country, do not qualify for federal loans, scholarships, grants, and so it makes higher education even more inaccessible to have to pay international rates when an individual is from this country. They've been raised here. They've and they want to continue with their education. And so the Dream Act, you know, it was a long a movement really led by a lot of queer youth. Women and labor workers, and I think there was also like a very progressive mindset that was just kind of like people that are undocumented that were noticing we're still not at the decision making table, and
you're on the table,
right?
Mm.
Yeah, and so then those folks ended up organizing, doing more folks ended up doing direct action, and then came in. Not one more, not mm-hmm. one more deportation. And they, oh, sorry, I think your video something or other. But either, so the not one more deportation was speaking to the fact that we don't want to create this dichotomy of the good immigrant and the bad immigrant. Nobody should be deported. Families should not be separated. And so that was the intent, to halt deportation proceedings. And that was at the time led by ENDALON, I'm forgetting the acronym, but it's a National Labor Immigrant Rights Organization. I think it's a National Day Labor, ENDALON. So that's what they do. Mm-hmm. And so then a lot of queer and a feminist undocumented direct action movement kept pushing for that. And there was still Jorge and Jenisette speak of a time of being very present to advocate for the Dream Act and not one more deportation and things like that in their activism before Familia.
Mm-hmm.
And also... they started focusing 5 years ago when Familia started on and trans detention, because what we had also heard was that we had a lot of our trans community and our queer community being sent to like a specific detention center in Santa Ana,
mm-hmm.
and the local city council had voted on approving contracting money, bringing in money and people's tax money into funding that contract. Mm-hmm. And so the advocacy around that was also ending trans detention. It was disguised from the point of view of ICE and it was disguised as an equity thing, as trans equity, allegedly.
Thank you so much for bringing this up. I want to bring this forward. I think it's so important for everyone to think about when we talk about abolition. I consider myself to be a prison abolitionist, and I say mm-hmm. Very proudly, I say, abolish ICE. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is a term and an idea that will sometimes rub people the wrong way, and they get the wrong idea. And what they'll say is, why would you say abolish ICE? Why would you say abolish prisons? What would we then do with all of the quote-unquote bad apples, you know, the people mm-hmm. who pose danger? Mm-hmm. And I want to bring this out because people who consider themselves to be abolitionists sometimes don't do a good enough job, in my humble opinion. I love everybody, right, who is in this movement, but we must be able to communicate our ideas and say we see what our role is as a continuation of the abolitionist movement. Mm-hmm. Originally, mm-hmm. abolishing slavery, right? Mm-hmm. We managed to do that. And when the original abolitionists were putting forward their ideas, people told them that it was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And because of the way that the system is so adaptable, there are so many people who manage to still be in bondage, but they do it under the assertion mm-hmm. that they are trying to protect the rest of mm-hmm. us. And but it's very slippery.
Yeah, I love that you're talking about that too, because like there's an alleged abolishment to slavery, but then as you're mentioning, you know, there's more of a reforming of the amendment to the Constitution. Literally reads that nobody should be kept as a slave, with an exception if people had been convicted of a crime. And so, you know, then you also have policy that's created to criminalize individuals. And so many moments of time where, like, prison abolitionist movements and organizers have spoken about, you know, what the effect for war on drugs actually was, and just how the criminalization or policing from the state to black and brown bodies, what it has looked like throughout time. And I think it's very important to link, because as a movement that's seeking the abolishment of ICE, we owe a lot to movements before us in black organizer communities that have been advocating for the abolishment of ICE for a really long time. Check out Angela Davis's Are Prisons Obsolete? That was published, I think, in the 60s, early 70s or other. And so there's been very, very concrete, accessible ideas and ideology put out there for by incredible activists already before we arrived to these conversations yeah. and before ICE became a thing.
Thank you. Yeah. I was lucky enough to be at the 20th anniversary of Critical Resistance,
yes.
and Angela Davis was the keynote and the moderator for a discussion with some of the other activists around Critical Resistance, which she helped to found 20 years ago. And she is able to so eloquently speak to the necessity of bringing in queer and trans people.
Oh, love her.
Angela
love
Davis that. Speaks so regularly mm-hmm. about particularly black trans women
mm-hmm.
and how their very lives, bodies, identities get policed, surveilled, and then jailed, and then forgotten because people who advocate for, you know, the filling up cells
mm-hmm.
will be able to bank on the fact that they don't have people that are pulling for them.
Yeah.
So you can just warehouse black trans women,
mm-hmm.
and it's not very likely that people are going to raise much of a fuss.
Yes.
And then, and this is where the insidious nature of some liberal reforms really reveal themselves, and what you were talking about in Santa Ana with the ICE detention for trans people and queer and gender nonconforming people is that it gets put forward as a progressive move that will keep people safe mm-hmm. inside of prison while expanding the system itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you expand the beds and the capacity mm-hmm. in a place and suddenly the quote unquote criminality mm-hmm. of the targeted population goes down.
Mm-hmm.
You mean to tell me you're going to allow that place to rot?
Right.
You're going to let your investment go mm-hmm. to nothing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I think you're going to make sure that those beds stay full and that that place stays running, which is why it's so important for us to oppose any expansion of the prison system and of ICE detention.
Yes.
And no matter what kind of progressive spin they try to put on it, we must stop them from expanding at all costs all the time.
Agreed. And I feel like, you know, they've also done things where they've gone out of their way to create departments, like, you know, a department that oversees the safety of LGBT people, allegedly. And even, yes, even the creation of detention centers that specifically held queer and trans individuals, there was also... you know, out of even trans individuals organizing around the attention to prison abolition, activist of our time, Cece McDonald, many organizing movements that there's something that was happening, I think, like within ICE, you know, their department talking about like, oh, well, this is equitable. Now we will have a place where people's gender is acknowledged and like this. Yeah. So I was like, well, actually, but you're still working on deporting them. And people also migrate because of the states, because of the effects of capitalism and policies that have taken place in their countries, have depleted resources, and have left people with no other options than having to make a difficult decision of leaving everything behind. And so I think there's just all these things that we need to connect with that, to have the conversations about why it's important to abolish ICE. And in the movement, in organizing for Familia to close down the detention center in Santa Ana, you know, it was a lot. I hear Jorge and Janice talk about how the community, the organizing community, was even torn. Like, but what does that mean? Like, we at least have our trans sisters here, and we know where they'll be at. And you know, but at the same time, we know how these systems operate. And like you're saying, it's a quota. Keep those beds, you know, keep money coming in when you have bodies inside prisons and cells and detentions. And so... essentially, they did close down and they did stop the contract after 3 years of organizing and pushing the city to not renew contracts. And so then they ended up shutting it down.
Thank you to all the activists.
Absolutely. And this was, you know, this was sometime shortly after Jenny Set had the demonstration at the White House about... well, maybe the organizing continued a little bit more, but I think it also brought our community together. I remember watching the video of Jenny Set at that action, and I felt like she was giving us a license to live, or I came more into my identities and my transness, and I
felt be more bold.
Yes, to be more bold,
unapologetic.
Unapologetic.
Yeah.
Very much so. And I feel like she did that for the movement and in empowering us and in moving us. And when they closed down the detention center in Santa Ana, we saw a lot of our queer and trans siblings go to other detention centers. And Cibola is a detention center outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And that's a detention center that... that our sister Roxana Hernandez was sent to. And so there was no health scan and nothing of that was done.
Can you say that again?
Absolutely.
There was no health scan.
Yes. So Roxana...
The warehousing is so blatant, but ICE is depending on an opaque media wall that won't share this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, to everyone listening, we think that, well, some of us think that they, at the very least, are doing things in a way that is healthy, you know, that won't make people who they're bringing in suffer adverse health conditions. But by now, hopefully, people who have illusions in them can see that the two babies that were just killed, the two kids that died in custody of arguably preventable illnesses. I mean, they actually don't do a very good job of health scanning.
Just 3 weeks ago, a 7-year-old, and just a few days ago, there's been more reporting about an 8-year-old that also died at the hands of ICE. And so you know, it speaks to how they operate and what you were saying about the fact that they, it's a quota system. It's like fill in the beds and bring in those contract money. And they're also, there's a lot of ways that this is a money-making machine as it's privatized. And so, and when we heard about Roxana being in there and we knew people in Familia before I came to staff and in the movement knew about her condition and were even trying to pay attention to it, a lot was disregarded. According to Congress demands that ICE release a letter report about what happened to an individual who's lost their life in ICE. It took ICE at least 7 months to produce this mediocre effort of a report that pretty much just states a timeline that criminalizes Roxana, you know, just vilifies her as like, doesn't include any information as to how her health was, her conditions. I've heard stories of individuals that call inside the ICE detention where they're held, they call it La Hielera, which means the freezer. So it's just extremely cold conditions. They have those kind of like aluminum, mm-hmm. those foil kind of like blankets. Mm-hmm. And I've heard stories of people talking about like bringing a blanket for like one of those foil things for individuals. And, you know, they were trying to help Roxana out and, you know, bring her a third and a fourth, that people inside of the cell started to organize by refusing to have their meal. So they were doing this on purpose so that the guards would bring health attention and bring a doctor for Roxana. And they still neglected all of that. And so there is a lot of people that were responsible for the death of Roxana, and we seek accountability to her death. Just recently, even some Congress people, two Congress people, Tom Udall and Rainrich from New Mexico, have spoken out in disapproval of this and the fact that there should be a report. Camilla Harris has as well. So there's, it has gotten some more attention, and I think with the recent deaths that we've heard of in the last few months, I think it's just prone ICE to release seven very mediocre reports of different deaths of individuals that have happened out of countless and countless. And so, you know, we'll continue to organize, we'll continue to center the voices and the experiences of trans, queer, migrant, and undocumented individuals. We'll continue building with the community in that way. And I think the solidarity between Black justice movements, particularly one of our main coalition partners, two of them are the Black LGBT Migrant Project, BLMP, and Transgender Law Center, TLC, who have a legal team that has provided a lot of support for the representation of Roxana's case. And BLMP is also bringing about a lot of campaigns forth. One of their campaigns they're working on right now is Free Udoka. Udoka Nweke is a queer Nigerian yeah. individual mm-hmm. who was released from ICE about 4 weeks ago, but that was also a long process, and we were also very afraid for how the deportation process for Udoka was going, how fast that was moving, especially, you know, us wanting to make sure that he's safe and doesn't isn't taken back to Nigeria. It's not something that he's yeah. seeking. And so his life was very much in danger in a situation like that. And so a lot of community, it was very important for Familia, you know, to start building the coalition intentionally with BLMP and TLC. And so, you know, we have a lot more of that to do. And I think that's part of movement building too, working on creating a different world that we want to see. And so.
Thank you. I want you to please talk about the direct action. We touched on this a little bit earlier, but the direct action orientation that Familia and some of your coalition partners have toward movement building, because it's no big secret, especially not to anyone that listens to the struggle, that many nonprofit organizations not only shy away from direct action, but are actually quite hostile to it, because a lot of their funding requires that they don't engage in any civil disobedience whatsoever, or they're worried about legal ramifications that may come about that they're not ready to take. But there are many people on the outside, you know, angry, you know, reds screaming inside that they're occupying a necessary movement space, and they're gatekeeping the kind of militancy that's going to be required in order to win what they're fighting for. But Familia has a different orientation. Can you talk about why that is and how that functions?
You know, I echo that. I feel like in my experience, the past 15 years or so being in a nonprofit social justice sector, there's sometimes this trepidation and this very quick way to shy away from what funders wouldn't like to see, and programming that's created and stuff. And I still see a lot of room for opportunity to take on tactics that work for us. And direct action has been one of many tactics for Familia. And I know that we've also had like very important conversations amongst the community about you know, the importance of showing up with how we can. And when Jorge and Jenice have spoken about year one and two of Familia and not having a resource but having their body and their voice, and you know, we've spoken about the importance of not romanticizing some of that, because it's also taken a toll, and we also don't want to see more of our community that's already experiencing disenfranchisement in many ways to then go through the criminal justice system. And you know, a lot of our community who are migrant and trans and queer individuals, ways to keep our community safe that wants to be a part of organizing, but direct action can get to a point where their safety is at jeopardy. And so we do a lot of organizing around that intentionally. More recently, in Albuquerque, in late August, just 3 months after Roxana's death, we went to Albuquerque and we had a gathering. There was roughly 120. It was one of the first Black and Brown, trans and queer gatherings for this particular campaign. And it was important that we gather to kind of talk more about how we want to continue building the movement. And there was a lot of conversations about just people's creativity and how we bring in the arts and how we bring up all these other radical tactics to bring attention to the need for Abolish ICE, Justice for Roxana, freeing Udoka. And we also did a direct action. We, for about 4 hours or so, we blocked the intersection in front of the county courthouse and city hall. And also a place that, you know, had approved funding and contracting for their local detention center. And so it was very important to us to, like, I guess, also empower each other, empower other queer and trans people or people of color that just know and feel and resonate with how the world should look like, and how the world, we don't need prisons and ICE. Yet might also, you know, be impacted by feeling empowered to take that on. And so we are currently planning our 5th year anniversary national encuentro. We're going to have a gathering. Yes, this we're really, really excited. It's going to be great, and you should be there. And yes, you're going to be there.
I will be there.
Okay, put on your calendar. May 17th through the 19th, we'll be in Philadelphia. And
I
we're purposely
Philly.
Wanting to be in the East Coast because, you know, we need to build more of a camaraderie and a solidarity in our movement with our trans and queer siblings from the Antillean Islands, Black and queer trans folks that you know, Puerto Rico, and we were just listening to this conversation about Haiti, and I think all of these conversations about revolution, queer and trans people have been part of those movements.
Absolutely.
And people that are migrating,
we get erased.
We need to, exactly, and yeah, we need to work together. And so it's very purposeful, wanting to go to the East Coast, wanting to be in Philadelphia, to continue building out that work within Familia. It's our gathering theme for the encuentro is mi existir es resistir, my existence is resistance, which is something that Janice has really lived by. You know, it's something that she's told us that she was telling herself as she was going into the White House, and as she's been resisting and continuing to do the work, that you know, we're very we're radically revolutionaries in our own spiritual existence, being a human, being a person in this binary world is immediately a part of, you know, resisting the binary. And
thank
so
you.
And so mi existir resistir, May 17th to the 19th. Contact us, look us up, reach out to us. There's a save the date information already in our social media and our website, and we'll have some registrations coming up soon, links for that. And I'm really excited also because in Portland, we're going to have a continuation to our event this past year. Jorge and Jenny Set traveled in 2018 to 10 different cities in the country to build more at the grassroots with trans and queer Latinx individuals around the what abolishing ICE looks like, specifically centering the Justice for Roxana campaign. And we're going to have an event here in Portland on Wednesday, January 16th, between 6 and 8. We'll be at Unite Oregon in North Portland. And we'll be talking about ways to get involved with the Justice for Roxana campaign, how to bring attention around it, give an update on that, and also speak more about the National Encuentro and, you know, outreaching to individuals so they can join us in Philadelphia.
So important. I'm very happy to help you get the word out about that. As the day gets closer, we can do another interview. Hopefully when Janice and Jorge get here, we can get them into cable, mm-hmm, so that people can hear from Janice herself.
Yes.
And I want to bring up, so you touched on this already earlier, and I want to bring it back out. Now, Roxana is from Honduras.
Honduras.
So, or Honduras. Yeah. Many of the people that are in the migrant caravan are from Honduras as well. So, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And these are Central American countries that it is always so important to note that these are not people that suddenly were feeling the urge to come and live the high life in the U.S. and
right,
have imaginations about how great it must be here. This is the land of the free and the home of the... No.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what's on their mind.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to get honest about the roots of this issue, the U.S. government, the CIA, mm-hmm, have played and continue to play a very critical role in destabilizing democratic movements and governments throughout the world, and in this context, especially in Central America.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking about the Sandinistas, the FMLN,
mm-hmm,
movements for justice that would put in unapologetic leftist governments into, mm-hmm, power, that would put a halt on the banana republics of old, of the extractive economies that have made the U.S. as rich as it is.
Mm-hmm.
We should not joke about or kid,
right,
ourselves here. This is why the countries have been so destabilized.
Mm-hmm.
They're not unstable countries.
Yeah.
They are destabilized countries.
Mm-hmm.
And people in those countries that are most vulnerable absolutely must be able to get asylum elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Especially from the country that made where they came from so destable in the first place.
Yes.
And anyone that does not link back to this,
mm-hmm,
I frankly do not take your coverage very seriously at all.
Right.
It's not just that this is a humanitarian crisis in terms of the brutality that ICE is doling out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it is brutal because of the fact that people have to leave their communities, mm-hmm. their loved ones, and everything that they hold dear
yeah.
because of a profit motive in a bigger, stronger settler colonial nation.
And you, yes, and you're even talking about how the CIA playing roles, and so the CIA has engaged in very very specific ways to support a government coup, to put in a government that you know, a very conservative, oppressive government that will retain the favors of the U.S., whether it business and foreign policy and all of that. And so absolutely, I feel like that connection must be made, and I think this is also why we come back to the conversation of abolishing ICE. We people have arrived here because of the destabilizing situations, economy, and safety, and the major militarization that's also supported by U.S. Military support to militarize. For governments to militarize their countries in Central America. And so, you know, Roxana's family has also written a letter to talk about what the purpose of Roxana migrating was, and that it was to flee the violence and the abuse that she would experience growing up and that she went through. And they speak very, you know, they speak very deeply to the pain that it brought Roxana to have to leave. But she also did it with a lot of hope and aspirations to be able to support their family a bit more. And she had, you know, dreams of opening up her salon, and you know, a lot of the girls, a lot of the women that met her, you know, just talk about just this light and this vision that she had, and they really believed that she would have made that happen. And so yeah, I'll share that some more with folks. You could follow Familia TQLM on social media. Look us up online, and we'll highlight you know, a lot of this perspective too. But her sister specifically wrote a letter, just kind of talking about why Roxana really has migrated, and how much pain there are to find out that in the midst of, you know, resisting and continuing on and in the struggle, you know, this, that, you know, now they don't have their sister with them. And so, mm-hmm. we've joined them in full support to seek justice for Roxana.
Can you talk about how you want people to get plugged in, people yes. that are listening?
Yes. Please support our organization, Familia. Please support Black LGBT Migrant Project, BLMP. For Familia, we're doing a lot of membership recruitment. We'll be going back to the 10 cities that we've been in: New York, in Miami, El Paso, Albuquerque, Phoenix, LA, Bay Area, including Sacramento, Portland, Seattle, Denver, Chicago.
Wow.
I'm probably forgetting a few. So we're going back to these major cities to continue mobilizing. And so we want to get people engaged. And, you know, I think there should be several tactics, too. We should work on holding ICE accountable. There's also all these other businesses that contract with in court circuit, circuit court. They're very involved in this processing of undocumented people into ICE and the whole money making machine. And so we really need to address Border Patrol and you know, these three bodies. We have to directly look at as our targets to bring accountability towards the deaths of people in ICE detention, how incredibly inhumane it is to drive people into detention center who are fleeing the effects of a capitalist, you know, nationalist,
imperialist violence
country that we reside in. And so Now that there's a current shutdown at the federal level,
at least partial.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the new Congress will reconvene session in early January, and so we're also working on bringing attention to your local Congress people about the Justice for Roxana campaign and what happened to Roxana in ICE, and also. Really, we want to highlight and center the leadership of our community. You know, I think that one of the ways that you can support our vision is by trusting trans and queer Black and brown people.
Say it again.
You need to trust, if you're movement building, you absolutely have to trust trans and queer Black and brown individuals, you know, who have a lot to offer, in being part of the movements that we've always been a part of. And so I think talking again about your point when Jenny Sett was at the White House for the demonstration, I think that was also key because we were acknowledging just the lack of people of color in decision-making tables for the migrant justice movement, very white, cis-led.
And cis if there meaning were, not trans.
Just, cis meaning not trans. Yeah. And also, if there were people of color, then there's probably citizens or people that haven't had the experience of migrating and or being undocumented. And so that's the migrant justice movement. And then also, working on arriving towards seeing queer individuals as part of social justice and the mainstream LGBT movement.
I think you had
being
like
very
the first
racist.
Time.
Yeah.
LGB.
And potentially the sprinkle of white tea, but you know. And that it's not centering the voices of Black and brown trans and queer individuals.
Sure.
And so, I think a lot of these institutions and a lot of these movements and our world in general has a long way to go with trusting and centering the leadership of Black and brown trans and queer individuals.
Yeah, it's no accident. I want to give you an opportunity to one more time give people all of the contact information so that they can support the work.
Okay, right on. Please do check us out at Familia TQLM for Trans Queer Liberation Movement, familiatqlm.org. You'll find more information about our Encuentro and the campaign on there. You can find us on social media outlets, Instagram, Twitter. Jenny Sett's really good at Twitter and Instagram and all the social media and Facebook. So you'll see our work there often. And we'll also be coming back here in Portland January 16th for that event. So let community know.
Excellent. Umi, thank you so much for spending time with me. I know that this will not be the last time that you're on the show, right?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I love this. Yeah.
I would really like it if we could do some coverage at the event.
Let's make that happen.
So
maybe
that would
we can
be
speak
excellent.
To some of our community members that have been part of Familia, and they could talk about one of our local community activists here in Portland, Emma Martinez, was one of the 7 individuals that were risking arrest in the demonstration at Albuquerque.
Thank you, Emma.
She's from Portland. Hey, shout out, Emma. And we have so many community members that are part of organizing, but then also. Have specifically hopped on board with the mission and vision of Familia and the intersections of where we're trying the work that we're trying to do. So there's a lot of local community members in Portland that are Familia
so
members
proud.
As well.
Ah, the struggle continues. La lucha sigue.
La lucha sigue.
Okay, thank you for listening, everybody. I love you. Have a good day.
We'll be right back. Oh, Welcome to your favorite radio station. Oh, well, you were already listening to your favorite radio station, KBOO 90.7.